locked in. We got the audio locked in. Jimmy's talking in the background. So he did a no-no.
What?
Jimmy just did a no-no.
What did he do?
He was talking in the back of the intro.
Oh. That's
all
right. That's Jim.
What's up?
It's okay. Don't worry.
I'm just joking around. It's GloucesterCast 282. We have Sedalia Schwartz with us. You can say hi.
Oh, hi.
People can't see you. There's no video camera.
I didn't want to do a no-no like Jim did. I was really quiet until I was told to speak.
Everybody's on pins and needles.
I was like, okay, is it time yet? Because you know me, I could just gab.
Oh, you can go.
I can go.
Yeah, we have Jim Mascarelli here.
Good morning.
And we have Jimmy Dalpia is back from Timmy Tebow duty.
Oh, I'll say good morning, Gloucester.
Kim Smith is back
good
from
morning,
very
Gloucester.
Her busy season. We're yes. thankful that you're here during your busy season.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
I'm your host, Joey Shimatau. It is the first podcast of June 2018, GloucesterCast 282. One little order of business. KBank Community Cinema gives two tickets to their movie theater. The listings are always stickied in the top of the blog, and there's a link in the show notes to go directly to their website. Sedalia, this is it's always busy season for you because you're a PR person.
It is.
So there's no rest for the PR people.
No rest for the weary. No. No.
Warren moved here, I don't know, it must be 2 years ago, and he has done nothing but incredible things for our local community. But his reach goes far beyond our local community. He's very committed to the Alzheimer's
Foundation.
Correct.
The Bluefin Blowout, he's one of the big sponsors. He's been involved right from the beginning?
Right from the beginning. This is our seventh year. And we were the presenting sponsor from the get-go. So Drew and Rob were kind of the founders of the event itself. And then last year, we took over the event 100%, and we were able to give back $50,000 to the Alzheimer's Association.
Tremendous.
And the year previous, we gave $8,000. So you can see how much that's grown. And we're so excited to do it again this year. And we have a goal, a real big reach of $100,000 that we're trying to give back. And so in doing that, or to try to do that, we had to figure out different ways to add to the event and add more layers so that we could have more giving. So the Family Fun Run 5K is one of those ways that we're doing that.
Mm. And so do you know where the course is?
I do. So we start at, I should just back up, it's June 10th, and registration starts at 7 a.m. You can also register online at bluefinblowout.com. But the course, it starts at Stageford Park, and then it goes to Hammond Castle and does a loop back. So it's really just a simple loop around, really simple course.
Plenty of parking over there. Beautiful, a lot of ocean views on that course. People love, like, when they can run by the water.
Yeah, it really is a nice route. We chose that just because it's simple. All family members can do it. All levels of running / walking, strolling. So you don't have to be a runner. We do have Becca Peasy, who's going to lead the run. And I don't know if you're familiar with her, but Becca Peasy ran 7 marathons in 7 continents in 7 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, how is that even possible?
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. She has been running for forever and still runs a lot of different marathons. She just did the Boston Marathon. She did one in Vermont recently. She runs all the time. So she is going to lead the run, and we're excited about that. And you don't have to be a runner. Like I said, you can. It's all levels. We're looking to get, you know, family members out there, kids, and it'll just be a great day.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
Number one question is, will there be t-shirts for the people that sign up?
So that's a great question.
How many interviews have we done with people that are promoting races?
Yeah, and they love
it. And people, like, I know a lot of people that don't even care if they run in the race, but they just want the
t-shirt.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the first 100 to register get a T-shirt, and the T-shirts are really cool. I designed the logo to kind of mimic a little bit of Gloucester with, you know, the lighthouse, and then a fish, you know, the tuna fish on it as well. And it says Family Fun Run. It's really cool. So that'll be on the front. And then on the back, we have our sponsors. And I couldn't have this podcast without mentioning our sponsors. So Lion Wall obviously is one of the sponsors, and the next sponsor would be Glass Tech, Nadina and Jeff Wilkes, which are Gloucester folk. Nadina had this idea of having a 5K run, and so we just took it and we went with it. And so I have to thank her for that, because we're really excited to add this to the whole event schedule. But
Jeff Wilkes is one of my favorite people of all time.
They both are. They are.
I don't know his wife, but like Jeff, we did business in the lobster business like a long, long time, forever, a long time ago. I know now he does boat work, like glass, fiberglass work. He's one of the funniest human beings I've ever had the pleasure of like interacting with.
He is. He's awesome.
He's an absolute savage Viking.
Yes, yeah. He is. And Nadine is right there with them. They are like a dynamic duo. They are so kind and giving, enthusiastic, and they have a great business, which, you know, at the core of it is customer care and experience. They're just, they really are great, great people. So we're happy that they put that on our radar and that we just went ahead with it. So
I just want to emphasize one thing. There are t-shirts, and the first 100 people that register get them. Okay, on top of that, I'm going to give people one more reason to register right away, because you can do it online and you actually get a little bit of a discount if you register in advance.
That is correct.
Right? So we just gave you three reasons
right.
If you're a runner. Well, four, right? Because you get the beautiful course that's by the ocean.
Correct.
You get the t-shirt if you register right away. You get a discount. For doing it, right? So.
Well, and then the biggest reason is that you're going to be giving back to Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that too.
Okay. No, and the t-shirt.
I'm kidding. My dad passed from complications from Alzheimer's. So it is near and dear to my heart as well. Mm. And you know, we have a deep history in our family. It's brutal.
It's a brutal thing.
It is a brutal thing to especially how long the process is for a lot of people.
And it's the caregivers.
Tell me about it. It's devastating to a lot of families. Like, you know, those bills don't, you know.
Yeah.
You don't just pull a plug on someone. That's not how we do things in this country.
So,
you know, that kind of care, long-term care, is just people can scrimp and save and be frugal their whole life and then get this disease and then kablam, $5,000 a month, just douche, like just chopping away at a big oak tree.
I mean, I'll have
you know, physically and financially, you know, and mentally. You know,
right, exactly. Yeah. Last year with our donation, the Alzheimer's came to, you know, we had a check presentation, and they actually were saying how they're progressing with the research, but also progressing with cities like Gloucester, where they're giving you guys the tools, and the police the tools, and the community the tools to actually recognize somebody with Alzheimer's ahead of time, so that you just don't think it's somebody wandering in the street. There's something a little deeper than that. So a lot of research and a lot of programs to support you know, the disease and families that are struggling with it. So we're really, you know, happy that that's happening.
Yeah, we're lucky to have guys like Warren come into this town, and he's such a big part. Anthony Catarano, like they kind of work together on a lot of like the initiatives, it seems.
Yeah, Anthony, we do a lot with Anthony over at his restaurant Tono. He's just again one of those
super giving
people that come in
and humble. And both of these guys, right, are just like complete givers. Just they can hang out with the most rich elite person, or just like a guy like me that's working on the docks, you know what I mean, and just humble, nice people that you want to be around, you
that's
know?
So true. It makes you work harder for them too, because you just want to, you know, do the very best that you can.
Well, I want to say shout out to you, Sedalia, because you
you just pull all this together, and this is just, I know it's part of your job, but you just do such a beautiful job.
She loves her job. You exude. Like, she gives off this thing, like, you know, you love what you do.
I love what I do. I mean, my full-time job is marketing for all the brands. So we just acquired Mercedes-Benz, so now we have 8 brands. So wow. Doing all the marketing and all the events for the brands. And then the Bluefin was just something that kind of came in. And so, you know, you just take it, you just go with it, and you just do the very best that you can. Try to dot all I's, cross all T's, and wish for the best.
Well, we know this, that being, and Jim is going to speak to this in a little bit, but being creative in something that you believe in is not like work. Because, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because
it's fulfilling.
You know what I mean? When you're doing drudge work, like in something that you're not passionate about, it is like that. Like that time goes by times 10.
Right.
When it's something that you love to do, or it's passionate, or it's your baby, your project, and you see it come to life, that time gets compressed like 1/10 of the time.
Yeah,
it seems like
there's not enough hours in the day to get.
That's exactly how it is. There's not enough hours in the day because you love it. I mean, I love it. I live it. I breathe it, and I love it.
Is there anything you want to add? I know you have to get your beautiful daughter. It's her birthday today.
You came in on
Sunday.
Yes.
Early in the morning.
Yes.
So
luckily she's 17. So yeah. I'm hoping that she's still sleeping.
She's probably sleeping.
So she'll not even know that I've left.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's my hope. But
BluefinBlowout.com is the website. The 5K, you register the 5K, and the dates. We have June 10th for the Family Fun Run 5K, and August 2nd to the 4th for the Bluefin Blowout.
That is all correct. Yeah. Yes, we're looking forward to a great fun run on June 10th and a successful Bluefin Blowout on August 2nd through the 4th. We can't wait. Summer's here.
There you go. Hey,
yes.
Thank you, Sedalia.
Thank you.
Well done.
All right, wasn't that fantastic with Sedalia?
Yeah.
We love having her.
Yes. We love her.
We're going to channel Kate. Everybody ready? Are you ready? We'll do it at the same time. We're going to channel Kate. Ready?
We love her.
I love her.
Sorry. Yes.
I love her.
The reason we say that is because my Kate, there's only two type of people in her life. I love her. I hate her. There's no one in between. As they're walking out the door, you'll know if she likes you because she wants you to hear as you're walking out the door. She's going to make sure she says it just loud enough so you can hear, I love him. So she gets credit. But you have to worry. If you walk out and you don't hear anything, you might fall into the latter category. Because
now she's going to make all her friends feel awkward.
Paranoid. Everybody's paranoid walking out the door. They're going to be like this as they walk out. Oh, no, she doesn't like me. Jim is here. Jim Masciarelli.
Yes.
His father. Masciarelli. His good Irish name. Jim, you've been working on this book, Beyond Beauport, 6 or 7 years?
7 years.
7 years.
A lot of research.
I just want to read the synopsis from the book jacket. Shannon Clark raised a family and worked waterfront jobs in America's oldest seaport. Her childhood dream to become a sea captain is revived when her long-lost seafaring Uncle Patrick visits with a salty tale of their maritime family ancestry of pirates and privateers. He shares recovered family letters and artifacts from the golden age of piracy. They take to the sea in Patrick's brigantine to follow the siren song of their ancestors in quest of destiny, truth, and treasure. The voyage is fraught with raw forces of nature, past traumas, and present-day sea raiders as their talents and beliefs of family, identity, and purpose are shaken to the very core. I added the very part. But that is...
If you ever do books on tape, hire...
I think I will.
Listen to
Was that good? Was that decent?
That's
the first time I read that. I had never read
that
through.
That was very good. That was excellent.
Yeah. Good meter, man.
Good
meter. I have good meter. Who knew? I hate my voice, so I'm going to listen to that and say I sound like an ignorant, like, you know, townie. Like, I hate my voice on the podcast. I hate it. When I do my little videos with the grill stuff, I, like, listen to it, and I just want to crawl inside of a like shoebox and never hear my voice again.
No, I totally.
You
totally
do have an inner critic in there, don't you?
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible. But this book.
I think you have a great voice for podcasts. Yes.
I think you're just saying that.
You got energy, Joey.
Energy is key, right? But I am lucky enough to have an advanced reader copy, an uncorrected proof, which is not for sale, bootleg of the book.
Yeah.
And so the one I have doesn't have the correct. It was interesting how you actually put it out there to choose the cover, right?
The publisher, Kohler Books, did that.
Yeah.
They had seven designs, and these were the top two. I was kind of partial to the one you've got in the bootleg copy, which shows in relief in the background in the clouds, Anne Bonny, the pirate from 1720s. But frankly, more people were attracted to this lovely redhead looking out to sea with the theme Beyond Beauport to a square rigger out on the horizon. And it was much more fitting, and people loved it. So yeah, that poll got the
that was the winner right there.
Yeah.
What up? So a woman is the person in this.
The protagonist.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. How did that come? Like, you're a guy. You're a man. Like, look at him. He's got his shirt unbuttoned halfway down. His chest hair is puffing out. He's got the big chain. The good thing.
He's got the
pirate coin. And the woman is a protagonist. So how did that come to be?
Well, interesting. The short answer is that after being a business guy that traveled all over the world interviewing people, I really just wanted to hang out on the island. You know, it was like, that's it. I want to do my creative stuff. I wrote a book, came out a long time ago. So 18 years ago is a long time between books. That was nonfiction, did well. But I really wanted to study fiction. And so I went through courses and workshops and critique groups, and I had a lot of people read this, and along the way I got to be a better writer. So why did I pick a strong female protagonist? I guess because I wanted to show the world I could. I love women. I don't believe it's wrong for a writer to write beyond their type. But here's what happened. I having traveled all over the place, you know, I met a lot of women professionally and so forth in business and otherwise, and I knew that the Gloucester women were different. There was something very, very special about them. And I write that in my author's note at the end. And they're the kind of, if my mother had grown up in Gloucester, she'd have been a Gloucester girl. Mm. And what I actually interviewed 24 women from ages 24 to 84 that were born and bred in Gloucester. And I told them I was doing some research for a book. And it was the women in midlife, in the mid-40s, that really had the best view of where Gloucester has been, where it is, and where it's going. Mm. And they were so damned interesting. So I'm still trying to figure out, well, why are they all so special? And the answer was pretty simple. It's the maritime culture for 400 years. I mean, they're the ones that kept the families together. They're the ones that, when the men were dead, drunk, disorderly, or whatever, or had died in wars, lost to the fishing, whatever, they're the ones that kept the community together, and that's why we have it today. So I was compelled to use a female with that kind of background, particularly working class, waterfront, you know, person. Mm. So my character is a combination of my mother, who I love very much, and her can-do kind of spirit, and many of the women I've met, the rowers, the gig rowers, the women anglers, and so forth. So that's how it came about. I fell in love with the character, and I had to figure out what the hell am I going to do with her to make the story interesting.
Yeah.
And then instead of a bunch of backstory, we started with a prank, because she's kind of in a funk about her family kind of diminishing. The kids have grown, left the nest. Uh-huh. The husband's strayed a little bit, and it starts at the weekend of the Gloucester Schooner Festival, and it ends 1 year later. But it toggles back in time to the 1700s and all these different pirates.
And when is it? It's based modern day.
This is a contemporary story that uses magical realism, lucid dreaming, to connect with these ancestral characters and events. And there are some modern sea raiders that overtake them on the vessel. So there's a lot of settings and events. There's a lot of campy stuff in there. And, you know, I had an agent that was looking at it pretty seriously. And he came back and he said, I'd really like to work with you. And he said, it's a bit of a picaresque, Jim. And I kind of said, okay, let me look that one up. And, you know, you realize that Don Quixote and Gabriel Garcet, you know, Marquez and others, a picaresque is when you have scenes in many places that are loosely connected. So he says, if you make those scenes build strongly upon each other, we can do a deal. In the meantime, I found a great publisher, Kohler Books, out of Virginia Beach, through my attendance at the Muse in the Marketplace Conference, which is America's number one writing conference out of Boston every year. I also like to do the Sanibel Island one in November, which is fun. And, you know, I met one of the people from Ingram there, and she said, you should talk to Kohler Books. And so I got a publishing contract from them, and without having to have an agent.
Nowadays,
congratulations.
Yeah. was a big deal.
Yeah,
and the reason was,
that is a big deal.
I had that's huge. Yeah, I know. Believe me, we have enough writers in here that like self publish, and it's just like,
that's really, how I did it too.
And I feel very fortunate. Yeah. I'm very fortunate. Yeah, they liked the manuscript and the unique premise behind it, so that was helpful. And,
yeah, just to get it read though.
Yeah, it's tough. I have a lot of compassion for writers, believe me.
Right.
So,
sounds like this could almost be a
movie.
I mean,
well, the good news, you know, I don't want to be bragging at all, but one of the things I was able to negotiate was I have movie rights if they ever come to pass. But you know, let's see. You know, let's take it. Right now, all I care is readers. That's what I want.
Right.
So tell me about what you obviously to write a book like this. There has to be a tremendous amount of research because. Yeah. You don't want, like, especially around here. There's so many critics and, like, people that have to show how much more they know about the fishing industry or sale than anyone else, you know what I mean? So they're dying to jump. So how do you, you know, because you have a business background, not a fishing background.
Right.
How do you dot your T's and cross your I's in relation to maritime industries and stuff?
I never made money at fishing, but I've done a whole lot about it, I tell you, over the years. But, you know, I have had so many readers, boat captains, waterfront people, sailors, and so forth, look it over. And I, in fact, since the bootleg copy, I've made 1,100 more edits with the publisher.
Yeah, wow.
And, I thought I was done, and I wasn't. And they did make some good corrections, even in some of the dates and how I presented the intro, the introduction to the 1623 and a whole bit. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that it's flawless at this point, but there isn't any piece of art that is.
And you're going to
After going through the drill, I'm very, very indebted to the people that have been my advanced readers, mostly women. I had people from the Writers' Center like Ann McArdle and, of course, my wife Judy, who's an amazing creative soul, graphic artist. You know, she's got a lot of incredible array.
Tina Greel was the person that reached out to me about this book, and it was just funny that Tina Greel has this little aluminum skiff. She goes out striper fishing, she's like a waterfront, she's like a wharf rat, you know. And
she's the essence of the Gloucester woman.
She really is,
the waterfront. She's amazing and a good friend. And her husband Terry,
great guy.
Yeah.
So like she drove by the wharf on her skiff going out striper fishing. And she's like, you gotta read this book Jim Mascarelli did. And, you know, I think the book was written about me and all this stuff. And then Jim.
Well, certainly there's some personality in there.
Yeah.
It's definitely. But also, you know, the folks like, you know, Gina Lampasi and.
Yeah, Dory Rowers.
All of those gals, yeah.
So Jim, like, just coincidentally, Jim came by the wharf the next day and he's like, Joe, I want, you know, check out this.
I just got back into town. Yeah.
And, I'm going to send you a press release about this. I'm like, well, why don't you just come in for the podcast? Because we'll be able to get much more across in a podcast than just a press release. It takes place in between the Gloucester Schooner Festivals of 2012 and 13.
Right.
But it goes back in time to a place of real pirates, privateers, and patriots from Gloucester, Essex to colonial Charleston, South Carolina to the Florida Keys, Jamaica, and
Eastern Caribbean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how much piracy was there off of these these coasts right here?
Okay.
You know, in relation to piracy, because you hear the rum runners and stuff like that.
Well, of course, you had Black Sam Bellamy and the Lyder, and, you know, off the coast of New England, there was a story that's well known around town about the Harridan family, Captain Andrew Harridan, who we talk about a lot in the in that whole family in Gloucester, which I researched. And he had been overtaken by an English pirate, John Phillips, who he had sailed his sloop, a brand new sloop out of the Annisquam, Andrew Harridan did, and was press ganged by this fellow. And
what was that word, press ganged?
Press ganged, yeah.
What
it was
that
put
mean?
Into service, pressed into service to be a pirate for him. And the boat hadn't been finished, but he had all of his tools there. They were doing a sea trial when Phillips and the gang took over. And there was a big scuffle that happened. One of the fellows from Ipswich, who had been previously conscripted by Phillips, by the name of John Fillmore, and he had actually become a very deadly pirate for him, but it was also to save his own skin. Anyway, they conspired together. This is the ship called the Squirrel, by the way. The
Squirrel?
This little sloop. And they were trying to fix up, he wanted to take the vessel, Phillips did, and he wanted them to finish it under his supervision, because he had been a ship carpenter when he was in England before he came over here to be a pirate. So anyway, to make a long story short, his head was severed. It was Andrew Harridan that made the final blow with his adze to the neck. He and Fillmore got together and made it happen.
Wow.
They put the head of Phillips on the mast and sailed through the Annisquam. There's a local story that isn't true. It turns out that the four pirates hung on Hangman's Island where the bridge is today for the commuter rail. That's not true. But what is true is the Boston courts had to have an inquiry because, well, was Harridan and his guys, were they pirating too? And they had to sort it all out. And they were absolved, of course, because they didn't.
It was his boat, right?
Yeah, and but they had to prove it. But Fillmore was another story, because he had actually led the raid for Phillips. Anyway, make a long story short, he got off because he had redeemed himself. But there are some funny differences.
Well, that's a good story.
There were different legacies.
Yeah, I don't know any of these things.
Right, but that's really interesting.
These are like...
This happened right in the Annisquam River.
Yeah.
What year
just
was
out,
that?
Well, out by the Isle of Shoals.
That's 1600s?
I don't have the date with me right now, but it was a little bit later than that. Yeah, but yeah, it would be that. The Edward Harridan came over from England in the early 1600s, was the first planter in the Annisquam. And many, many famous sea captains in that family. Jonathan Harridan, in particular, was the most notable privateer in the Revolutionary War for us. He took 1,000 cannons from 60 British warships. And he was a boy from Gloucester that ended up in Salem. So that's why you don't hear about him as much. And then Nathaniel Harridan, his younger cousin, same family, was the old sailing master for the USS Frigate Constitution.
Where do you get all this information? Like the research, where did you go?
Everywhere, anywhere I can. It turns out that there is a monument that people pass every day for Nathaniel Harridan, right by the tennis courts, by the Bully, over by the Stacy Boulevard. And but it's a little thing. And back in 23, at the 300, that was dedicated to Nathaniel. And the plan at that time was to also dedicate one to Jonathan Harridan, who was actually quite much more famous. Mm-hmm. But that family had been forgotten, and I intend to work with Peter Anastas and some other people to resurrect that family. I actually met a ninth generation descendant.
Ask you, are there any, did they still live around here?
That name is gone, but there is another fellow, Andrew Hobbs, I think is his name, is a carpenter in town. I haven't met him yet, but we spoke. He's done some genealogical work, and I shared what I had learned, and he met this other person, Nancy Poland, and she's a descendant of Harridan's.
Jim's wife works at the archives. Well, she doesn't work at the archives. She may as well work in the archives. She's down there.
Oh, with Peter?
No. Well, she's down there doing a lot of research.
Yeah, a lot of work.
And she's getting to know the ladies.
She is obsessed and has been obsessed for years.
With genealogy.
Oh, cool.
She is down in the City Hall archives. She pulls out artifacts for the blog all the time.
Oh, nice.
Of these incredible tidbits of things that we've that have been buried down there.
And then she'll go over to the National Archives over by JFK. And she'll do a lot of work over there.
Oh, neat. I'd love to meet her.
And that's a big thing.
She's very cool. So
you know, one of the things, every book answers some questions, right? And one of the questions in this book is, does ancestry matter? You know, because for a lot of people, it doesn't. Certainly, you can develop a great identity on your own without knowing, but for any of us, and I have, and my wife Judy, we did our roots tours in the mid-90s. My Italian ancestors going way, way back, and the Mascarellis, and she did her German relatives, and found out that actually she's part Italian. She didn't think so.
Oh, that's funny.
Her grandmother was born in Venice, but was from South Tyrol before that. Anyway.
Wow. So tell me about the main character and her ancestor. She has connections to Anne Bonny,
right,
and Gloucester's early history makers.
So the uncle gives her a jeweled sword, that's Anne Bonny's sword, that was in the family attic for years, was stolen by her mother from her grandmother, and a little piracy in the family, right? And there were some family letters, and the uncle had been safekeeping them for many years, and when he came back into town, he said, I've done some research, and you are an 11th generation descendant of Anne Bonny. We have some papers, and we're going to go find some authentic pirate gold, and I think we know where it is. We don't have a treasure map, but we have a description of where it could be in the 10,000 islands in the bays and inlets of Marco Island. And that's actually very credible, because Spanish galleons from the early 1600s got water, fresh water, at a place called Dickman's Point there, where the Everglades leach out.
Mm.
Pirate history buffs are going to be very interested about the fact that I identified this guy Burley in Ipswich, that Burley family, that where Anne Bonny was married, James Burley, and these Burleys were from Ipswich.
Mm.
So I connected all of the dots back to Anne Bonny.
Jesus, incredible. This book can't come out soon enough for the summer for the beach people.
I know, it's like perfect summer.
Yeah, beach read, cruise boats. Anybody likes a good sea story.
Yeah, no, this is a brilliant read for anyone in this town or, you know, beyond.
Can I borrow your copy?
Yeah. Seeing as you know, I'm too busy to read it. When do you think that? When's the launch?
Okay, thanks. I just secured the Rocky Neck Cultural Center for July 29th. The pub date is the 24th, so the timing is excellent. It's a Sunday. It'll be like 6:30 to 8:30. Wine and cheese. It'll be kind of literary. I've got posters of all the pirates, and I'll be talking about Charles Vane and Jack Rackham and Mary Read and Rachel Wall, a female pirate off of our coast here, that comes into the picture. My character, Shannon Clark, is a dilettante. You know, she's a bit of an actress, a poet, an artistic person, and so she likes to don pirate garb, and her three friends, and they represent pirates: Grace O'Malley from Ireland, Mary Read, Anne Bonny, and pirate Rachel Wall, who. That's an interesting story locally.
So tell me, Jim, do you have a website set up for this?
Yeah, jamesmascarelli.com.
Okay.
The other event, the bookends for the season for me, is the end of the season. I'll be having a big bash at the Gloucester House, Lenny Linquata, and I've worked out something. It'll be on August 29th. This is Wednesday night. And what's nice about that is I'll be doing a little bit of a raffle throughout the summer that will result in some money being donated to one of the artistic organizations or the Writing Center, one of the organizations we have. And that'll be an authentic pirate silver coin from the Atocha wreck of off of Florida, from the Mel Fisher Museum. So, and I have some other pirate artifacts. I have cutlasses, I have manacles from, you know, this is, those are typically props for, but they're actually realistic remakes of, of those. So.
Are you, is there going to be a sequel to this? Because it seems like this is right
for, I have plenty of material. I want to see how it goes. But yes, I definitely do. The characters, I might change the point of view character a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of other writing projects I'm also anxious to get to.
This is amazing. All right.
There's a lot of I'm just looking at how this was published. A lot of nice touches.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like.
And that's the pre. That's even before it's all polished off.
Well, I like the this sort of like old map look on the
Sailcloth.
Sailcloth.
Every chapter,
It really gives it a nice look.
It's that's a nice piece to have on a coffee boat, on a coffee table.
You know, I was going for the feeling of an old classic sea story. I mean, we all grew up with those, right? Jack London's The Sea Wolf and Conrad's Lord Jim, or Patrick O'Brien's Master and Commander, Hemingway's Old Man of the Sea, and mostly important for us, Joe Garland's great book about the Dorymen. And that, to me, is right up there with The Old Man of the Sea. Lone Voyager.
The Lone Voyager.
I was very inspired by that. And I've been very pleased that people like Peter Anastas and Ron Gilson and a number of other folks have given great blurbs for it and provide a lot of support.
Ron Gilson, one of my favorite guys. Yeah.
And friends for a long time.
There you go, Jim. So the website is James Mascarelli. I have a link in the show notes because I'm not going to spell it all out, but it's in the show notes. You can click on that. When the book is available, you'll be able to purchase it through the website.
Absolutely. There's a new widget that the publisher has worked on where I don't collect any money. I don't do anything. It's called Aereo. It's an app, and it works with PayPal and all of that. So people can just...
Will it be available at the bookstore, Gloucester?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. We'd like
to give
them.
They'll be helping with some of the events. I'll be giving talks all over town. That won't be so much about the book, but about some of the history that's relevant. And I'll be doing some signings, Cape Cod Museum, and some other places. Yeah.
Jim, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks a million for having me. I've been bottled up for a few years, so if I go a little long, it's because I'm enthusiastic.
No,
it's all good.
It was awesome.
So Jim had to leave, and that was a very interesting piece, wasn't it?
He's an awesome guy. Yeah.
As we paused it, he wanted to make sure we gave a shout out to Terry Weber, who had been helping him with the edits and setting up meetings and PR and stuff like that. So shout out to our good friend Terry Weber.
She is a fantastic.
We love Terry. Terry's been fantastic. I have a lot of little things that I wanted to talk about.
Okay, all right.
I'm getting back into like non-vacation, sleepy Joey on the posts thing, and back into like let's focus because this is Gloucester's time to shine and not just Gloucester but like devote a little bit more energy into the blog. Anyway, so I keep my show notes in my Evernote little online note keeper.
Okay.
Do you use Evernote?
No, you guys
probably don't. So Evernote like syncs between all your devices. Like my iPod has it, my desktop has it, my cell phone has it. So if I get a thought, I just put it into the show notes,
and then it
syncs with everything, so I can see it here,
right.
And I can just put it directly into our.
I
show
just
notes.
Write it in a little notebook.
Yeah, and then we have to transcribe it instead of it already being ready to copy and paste.
No.
That's what takes us an extra 10 minutes because you don't send them to me. Which is fine, and I don't have a problem with that. But that is the point that I'm trying to make: is when, as I go, I can copy and paste it because it's already done.
Well, also during the whole week, like I have a lot of ideas, and I just try to print it down to just a few on Sunday morning. You know what I mean? So I don't want to
bog down.
Yeah, I don't want to bog down. So.
But sometimes you can. Yeah. I think it's good. It's always good. You know, it's every year. There's a website that a geeky website, Life Hacker, that it's a blog basically, but they talk about life hacks and stuff.
Right.
And they always do a thing every year of what's the best way to keep notes? Like, is it, a little little notebook that you keep, a physical notebook with a pencil right. that you take notes as you go, as you're in there, right. or is it a service like Evernote or what people use? And it's funny how like the notepad, the physical notepad, seems to win every
year.
All of the things. And these are really tech geeky people.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I like the physicalness of actually writing sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I really like that. And I think sometimes I use writing as, like, it's also a way of thinking as well. Like, the physical act of it, which isn't, it isn't quite as flowy if you're typing for me. I mean, I flow a lot on the typewriter, on the computer as well, but I don't know. I like both. Because lots of times, also now, everybody has their cell phone with them all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm just there at the beach taking pictures of the guy, you know, Joel Lucido or Phil Kukuru, I'll never remember how to spell their name, so I quickly type, you know, I say, well, tell me how to spell your name.
You keep a notepad with you? Or you do it on your computer?
I always keep a notepad with me for, like, when I'm driving into Boston and I have lots of ideas about things. I write on my notepad.
Maybe the difference is you have a purse with you, and a guy doesn't generally keep a purse.
But then, when I'm taking pictures of somebody, and I need, then I quickly type it in my, you know, notes to myself on my phone.
On your phone. How about you, Jim?
Well, Pat, you know, I know she always, she would take papers and write it on receipts and all these things. And then she would spill it all out on the table and try to remember, and then come back to me and saying, you remember, I wrote this when we were riding down the road. So I finally said, you get in the notebook. And we went out and got the old steno flip.
The one with, right. yeah, the one with like yeah. the spiral,
and I said,
spiral bound.
That's
book.
What I know.
Yeah.
You're getting this. So we have that, and she has it on her. It always falls out of her pockets. We have to pick it up on the floor while walking away. But she does have that. Now, personally, myself, with all the stuff I'm doing, you're right. I don't carry a notebook. I like the cargo shorts.
Yeah.
So I do put a notebook in there if I'm doing that. But when you're wearing your dress pants and you're out doing something big with all the tours I do and stuff, and somebody tells you some things, I don't have that. So, yeah, I'm using my phone.
Yeah.
I go to notes.
Yeah.
So I kind of use both, but I'd rather use the notebook. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's the Columbo in me or whatever. You flip it and, you know, I'd rather have it. Plus the fact, like you, Joy, I like to rip off that page and throw it away.
Well,
okay, that's done.
Yeah, I know. There's pros and cons.
Yeah. So
I do like the syncing ability of Evernote. Like,
yeah.
So I have it at my fingertips because I'm a guy that composes the show notes and puts the production end of the podcast. So it's less typing for me,
right.
transcribing and everything else.
Yeah.
I do it once and I can move on to the next thing.
Anything I can help you. Wow, with everything you're doing, so that works.
No, it's all good.
You'll probably kill me, but I don't sync my iPhone to my computer. I don't want it synced. I never plug my iPhone into my computer. I don't plug mine in either.
It does it wirelessly.
Well, I don't want mine to sync.
So, you don't have as many contacts as I do in your phone. So if you don't have it, so if you lose your phone, what happens with all your contacts?
Well, they're in my computer anyways. Like, I have 5,000 contacts in my computer, and I don't want them on all those contacts on my phone. So I'm not connected to the cloud or anything like that. I just don't.
I don't know. If I lose a phone, say I get a phone every 2 or 3 years, like, I want to be able to press that button and everything just sync up.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. Well, so what is the reasoning that you don't want it for?
I don't like, so when I used to plug my phone into the computer, like, I don't like getting if I'm looking at an ad on the computer, I don't want to all of a sudden see ads all over, the same ads all over my phone and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I don't know. I don't want it to be, you know.
Well, that's the reason you don't have the Amazon Echoes and stuff, because you feel like
right.
they're trying to market to you.
Well,
see, to me, I don't care.
I like
the trade-off for me is, and there's not a right or wrong answer, but the trade-off for me, being able to use all the Google services and the Amazon services that make my life, you know, a lot easier and stuff like that, to me, in my organizational workflow, I accept and it does not bother me at all that I could do a search for a griddle and I see a bunch of ads for different griddles in my sidebar. That doesn't bother me in the least at all. I know that there are people like yourself that it does bother, but I like the trade-off for me is no harm, no foul. I don't see what the... So what is the bad part, you know? You just don't...
There's a lot of information and data being collected on people. A lot. And I don't know what the... You know what I mean? Like, it never goes away. It's always there. And I just feel like I like to have a little control over it. I don't know.
Well, there you go.
Who knows how this data will be used in... You know, it's the European model gets stricter and stricter and stricter, where the American model just gets looser and looser and looser. So, you know, I don't know. Mm. I'd like to, you know, where is all this data collection going?
Well, there are definitely people that are very, very concerned about it.
I don't worry about it. I'm just like not.
Well, you're not utilizing those services, though.
Yeah, I don't want to be tracked everywhere I go. Like, you know, every time you add an app, then they're tracking you. Or I don't know.
So there's that, right? And I understand that may bother you on some level.
Yeah.
But for me, like that tracking, like when I can just press a button and say, navigate to this address,
right?
Well, because it knows where I am.
Well,
it literally, I don't have to do anything. It's like voice command, take me where I want to go, and it takes me there.
Right.
You know, I like that to me. But.
Well, to me, it's just as easy to type in an address in Google Maps and go there.
Not if you're driving. I don't think it's as easy.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but that's, like I said, it's just totally preference. So here's my thing that has irked me for many years, but I never really brought it up. Sock sizes. I happen to have a sock size.
Yeah.
So my foot size, so I have this, I have a you know, I had that, what I consider a brilliant idea of going back to analog appliances. So instead of not having, so you know how like every appliance has a digital screen and those modules inevitably, as soon as the
warranty
period goes away, they break down and you have to have tech come.
Did I tell you what happened to our washing machine?
No.
We had a fancy washing machine when we first moved to, you know, Plum Street with a, you know, computer board. And like the day after the warranty ran out, the computer board went, and it was going to be $200 to fix it. I mean,
$200 to show up.
To show up, $200 for the part. And I said, forget this. And I went and bought a mechanical washing machine for $400.
Oh, they do make them.
Yeah, they still make mechanical washing machines. And now we've had it for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And you know, well, every now and then the belt goes or this
right,
goes.
Right, but someone can fix it. Like
somebody
not an issue.
Like in a day, and
well,
it's
that was
like $100 to get it fixed.
Right, I wanted to start a company, an appliance company, and call it Analog. And do you remember, so the point is, like the washing machine, when I was 4 years old, that my parents had in the house, when I graduated college, they still had that
same
washing machine.
That's the same with my mother and father-in-law.
Right.
30 years, avocado
green.
Yeah.
Right, there you go.
There
my mother's
go.
Was like a horrible burnt mustard. So when I bought my house in Hamilton, we bought the fancy $1,200 washer and $1,200 dryer, whatever it was, with all the bells and whistles, and literally within 4 years,
So they
either sell you the pre-sell you the warranty for $400,
right?
That if you don't buy, so then you don't buy it, or if you do buy it, you're out the $400.
Right.
And then inevitably, as soon as that warranty is up, it's going to break. And then if you don't buy it, they come out and they price the repairs always just at the level of.
Yeah.
It's like half of the cost of a brand new one, and it's already 4 years old, and you know whatever they fix is going to need to be fixed in four more years. So the premise is the analog, go back to making them where there's basically four parts. There's the motor,
right.
the fan belt and the knob that like you click physically hear the clicks when you turn it.
So what did you get for your new place? What did you get?
They washed and dry over there. I didn't.
Oh,
have
they
to,
were okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just.
Well,
funny.
I agree with that. One of the first jobs I did trying to get money so I can go to college and all that stuff was I worked in General Electric. I worked in a washing machine repair, and they brought in the transmissions. So they would bring out, take the transmission out of the washing machine, and it looked like a smoker's thing. It was a big base with a rod going out. And what we had to do was, if it was broken, you know, something broke inside, we had to take it apart, take all the parts out that were there, threw out the bad stuff, and we put all the other parts in a bin. They cleaned it, and then it went down the line, and they remade the transmission using these parts that they got from the other thing. So I was taking them out and doing that. So my job was, at first, I'd take it all apart. Then they saw I kind of showed up for work and did things. So supervisor comes in and says, we're going to move you down the line. Before you know it, I was building GE transmissions for washing machines using parts that they take apart.
Wow.
And occasionally, we had to go into the parts house to get another one because we ran out of that certain one. But you had to fill out all this paperwork to show that, you know. So that was that was the day back then.
So that was my brilliant idea, business plan that someone should do, like,
right.
You know, and totally market it that way.
Yeah.
This is a washing machine that has fewer parts, built with the, you know, thick galvanized porcelain coated thing there that is
metal
indestructible,
metal parts,
right?
Metal
and unapologetically going backward in time so that you can have a washing machine for 25, 30 years. Anyway, that was then. Now, my latest and greatest, I believe, is, so if you go, if you're, see, people that don't have shoes this size, feet my size,
right.
Probably will not understand where I'm coming from. But if you are one of these in-between people, I guarantee you, you can relate. So shoe size, U.S. shoe sizes between 6 and 12 and a half has a sock size of 10 to 13.
Right.
Shoe size 12 to 16 is a sock size 13 to 15. This is the problem. My shoe size is 12.
You need that.
So if I get the smaller one, the smaller size, this super tight. If I get the larger size, they're super, super, super loose on me and falling down.
That's
no in between.
Right, that's a dumb range there.
But it's been that way forever.
Wow.
So there's no one that's, so my idea is to sell the tween size socks.
Wow.
So to market them from the shoe size from 11 to 13.
Wow.
Which what shoe size are you?
I'm 8.5.
Yes.
8.5?
Yeah.
That's like a midget size.
Yes, it is.
I'm a 12. I don't feel like I'm much bigger than you.
Well, you got clown shoes on.
I guess I do. I have big clown shoes.
Let's put it this way. I would get kicked by that. I would know it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So anyway, so this has been a thing. So you buy the regular size socks and they're fine for you.
They're fine.
Yes.
But for me,
yes.
It's like I go through this thing
that's crazy.
All the time.
I understand the big and tall shops that they do for that guy, that for that size and everything. So this totally makes sense.
Right.
Totally makes
just
sense.
Go like an in-between overlapping so that a guy like me can have a comfortable sock.
Right.
And I would buy those.
Right.
I couldn't get suit jackets.
Many guys who would buy them. Because that's a ridiculous range.
Isn't it weird?
It's
like
really,
six, shoe size 6 to 12 and a half.
Right.
So you're telling me as a 12, I'm going to fit into something that's going to fit a guy that wears a 6?
Yeah.
Well,
it never works.
Kim, I couldn't get suit jackets for the longest time with my size, so I had to go over to the teen section. And they're looking at me going, you know, you're buying it for your son or something?
Husky.
No,
your husky.
Me.
Your husky son.
Okay. So I had to go and get something that way. So I understand that in between. Joey, I'm behind you. Totally makes sense.
You got it, right? You're picking it up.
Speaking of analog things, my sewing machine is metal. and it's just
the Bernina.
Yeah, it's a Bernina.
Yeah, we talk about this.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, maybe it's 40 years old now.
Yeah, no, you talk about like people. Yeah. You try to find them every once in a while on eBay and stuff.
And it's analog. I mean, it's analog. There's no there's no computer in it.
Yeah.
So.
And you sew. And you do so. I'd like a quick Good Harbor footbridge update because this people want to know.
Yeah, this is very important.
Yeah.
So I saw Phil Kukuru last week in the parking lot, and they are only waiting for the marine grade wood to. This is the temporary fix. Mm-hmm. So Chad Kachopoulos put up the 21 pilings. I believe he said he put up 21 pilings, and then. As soon as the wood gets here, Phil and Mike are going to be working nonstop to get the bridge up.
So as of right now, if you park on that, well, it's no parking now anyway, right?
There's no
after
parking
June 1st or
right,
whatever it is,
right.
You can't park there. But a lot of people access the beach that way. Right now, you can't access the beach.
Well,
that way.
You can go if it's low tide. At low tide, you can walk across the little creek there.
Oh, okay.
But you can't do it. I mean.
Yeah, but you're not going to bring like a
you don't
want to
swim
kid
across,
with a, like,
right.
A bunch of...
No, it's hard because like to check on the piping plovers right now, I have to park down way down by the...
the private end?
Yeah, the Good Harbor Beach Inn.
Yeah.
Then I have to, before I could just pull into the parking lot because now they don't open up the parking lot gates until 8 a.m. So, at 5:30 in the morning I have to go down to the private end, walk to number one, check on the nesting area at number one, then walk into the parking lot, walk across the parking lot, check on the...
Is there parking, public parking down the private end?
Just for residents. There's like a... And at 5:30 in the morning, there's always parking spaces available. Yeah. But there's like, if you have a resident sticker, you can. There's like 15 parking places down there. The first like 8 or 10, I don't really know the numbers, are reserved for the hotel. But then the next row is for residents.
Is it clearly marked?
Yeah. It's residents only. Yeah.
So what are they saying? So is there any time frame that they're shooting for?
It's probably going to take a couple weeks. Like once they get the wood, which they're trying to, I think they were trying to get it express delivered by Friday. So I don't know if it was delivered or not. I don't see any wood down there. But as I said, they're going to, Phil Kukuru and Mike Tarantino are tasked with this, and they're going to be working nonstop on it, even over weekends.
God bless them.
Where's that wood coming from that they have to express it here?
In my head, all I could think of was like, why is that taking a long time?
It
seems like that would be readily available, but I'm sure there's a good reason for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they got this down, so I'm sure it's very...
I'll ask them that specific question.
I am very sure. I want to mention... there was a lot of restaurant news this week, openings and stuff. Oh, so there was Pastel Via Corte, our friend Danielle,
is
moving to that big space down in the corner there across from Larson's and across...
she's going to be carrying a lot more stuff, and I was wondering if she's going to...
Has she got that whole space? Because that's enormous.
It's big. It's beautiful.
I don't know if they cut it. Have you looked inside?
Yeah, I've just peeked inside. I didn't see anything yet.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Yeah, we were wondering that too because that's...
She told Tom that like a month ago and I was
like,
what?
Doubling if not tripling.
Right, her space.
What she had.
You know, she's just such a go-getter and she has so many, beautiful things to offer. I imagine she'll be offering more. And I think she's been teaching pasta making. She gave Liv a lesson on pasta making.
So the Pastaia Via Corte is going in there. It's at 123 Main Street. Machaca, our friend Eric.
Oh,
is
that open yet?
Yes.
Yeah, it opened, but they're still waiting on their liquor license, which is, so there's this thing. And it doesn't resonate with me, but, and it does, and you don't, what your ideas don't resonate with, we have differing opinions on the whole, like, letting these apps have control over your location or stuff like that. We have differing opinions. There are a lot of people that have differing opinions on if they can't get an alcoholic beverage, they will not go to a certain restaurant.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So Machaca opened up and they don't have their liquor license yet, which is kind of to me it's a blessing. But I had this like argument, semi-argument, because I love Alicia Cox.
Right.
She said, why is Eric opening Machaco without the booze? And my response to her was, well, he doesn't have his liquor license. It's going to come very soon. But don't you think it's a good idea to not throw, like, an entire staff to the wolves? Right. Like, you know,
a soft opening
that you can get your processes down and routines down and stuff like that. And she's like, that's like crazy. Like, I would never go. I'm like, I don't think he wants like a mob scene the first day. Because you only get one chance to make a first impression.
Right.
And if it's a shit show, what happens? Like in this day in social media, like, oh, the service was horrible.
Right. I can't. No, I agree with you.
Anyway, I went a couple nights in a row. I love Eric, and he's like a brother to me. But I just wanted to say, Luis is the chef. Luis is the general manager who was one of the partners, original partners at Jalapenos. Mm-hmm. The food is so far surpassed anything around here as far as Mexican. He has sauces that have so many layers of flavor in them.
Wow.
They're incredible.
Wow.
The salsa is a hand. They make the salsa fresh.
Oh.
They have nothing out of a can.
Oh, okay, that's.
It is.
You sold me.
You can eat. It is just so good. The fried avocados. I went with my nephew BJ the first night. He has like a lime habanero kind of sauce that you put on it. I'm sorry. I'm drooling right now. I have in my mouth. I'm literally drooling thinking about it. It was that good.
So are they open tonight? Because Tom and I were going to go out to eat tonight.
I believe they are, but they have a Facebook, but update their Facebook.
All right.
But you can't get a margarita yet. But if you can survive,
when you say
you can't bring BYOB either yet.
And you can't even get wine or beer.
No,
no,
not yet, nothing.
But that's fine. With
but
me.
Literally, that's good. Within a week or two, that should happen.
Right.
So it's the world, I don't think, is going to stop spinning on its axis because you can't get a thing. No one says you have to go there right away.
Right. It'd be
but
time
just
to
be
go.
Aware that.
I don't think he wanted, when he was here talking about it and everything else, yes, he talked about his margaritas and everything, but it's about the food. So I think.
It's about both because these are top shelf margaritas. But
again, come.
I mean, this place
that
is going to be around for 20 years. Like,
right.
People can be a little patient or whatever.
And plus, it looks the best it's ever looked there from the exterior, because they put clapboard over the cinder blocks.
No, there was always the